Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hippie Witch, magic for a new age. I'm your host, Joanna DeVoe, and this is a happy, hippie place where magic with a K meets the law of attraction. Hi, thanks for joining me for episode 3 of Hippie Witch, magic for a new age. I know that some of you are listening right now because you practice magic with a K, or what you might refer to as witchcraft, and that some of you are listening because you practice the law of attraction. So I thought it would be nice to do an episode that helps us all to reach some kind of common ground and hopefully demonstrates how magic with a K and the law of attraction are basically the same thing with perhaps a different style of expression. And I thought that the best way to do this would be by discussing the 7 hermetic principles. And I had to laugh when I looked up the word hermetics on Wikipedia and saw it described as being the deliberate use of exceedingly obscure, convoluted, or esoteric literary or graphical symbolism and imagery. My other phone is ringing. Sorry, guys. It was hard to get that all out while my phone is going boing, boing in the background. So basically it's saying that it's totally convoluted and confusing, and it totally is, or at least it can be. It can really be confusing, hermeticism. And I mean, even the origins of hermetics is pretty shady, and conflicting theories abound. Some people say that it originated thousands of years ago in the mind of the great spiritual master, Hermes Trismegistus. And the name Hermes Trismegistus means Hermes thrice great and could be attributed to the Greek deity, which you probably have heard of, called Hermes, who was in Greek mythology known as the messenger of the gods. Some people believe that the Egyptian deity Thoth, the scribe of the gods, was the original Hermes, and in fact, the two gods were eventually worshipped as one in what was formerly the Temple of Thoth and came to be known as the Hermopolis. And just to make things even more confusing, some people say that Thoth was not even Egyptian, but that he was actually from Atlantis. So there you go. You can make of that what you will. If you'd like to delve further into the history of hermetics, I highly recommend visiting gnosis.org, which I will include in a resource list that I'm going to go back and add to this show's description after we wrap. But this is a big subject, and I only have 30 minutes here, so I'm going to try to, like, go as fast as I can. The most extensive collection of hermetic writings is the Corpus Hermeticum, but what we're going to concern ourselves with today is a text not nearly as ancient, and that is the Kybalion. The Kybalion is a book that came out a century ago and was mysteriously written by 3 unnamed initiates, and it outlines the 7 hermetic principles that so many magicians and law of attraction practitioners draw upon today. And those are the 7 principles that I will be briefly outlining here. And like I said, since this show is only 30 minutes long, I urge you to go visit a site like Sacred Texts where you can read the Kybalion for yourself. It's hosted there in its entirety for free. And again, I will include that in the list of resources. So, the Kybalion. Adding support to the Egyptian theory, the Kybalion introduces its take on hermetic philosophy like this. From old Egypt have come the fundamental esoteric and occult teachings which have so strongly influenced the philosophies of all races, nations, and people for thousands of years. Egypt, the home of the pyramids and the Sphinx, was the birthplace of the hidden wisdom and mystic teachings. From her secret doctrine, all nations have borrowed. And I think that this is an important point to make because whether or not it's true that Hermeticism started in Egypt, much less was recorded by some all-powerful ancient deity, It has, in fact, informed all variety of religious and magical tradition throughout the ages, including branches of Kabbalah and Gnosticism, ceremonial and traditional witchcraft, alchemy, Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, and, of course, the law of attraction. So with so many institutions laying claim to this ancient philosophy, I think it's safe to assume that some power lies there, and I would say that that is the power of intentional manifestation, the power that we all possess to co-create our reality in conformity with our will. So keeping that in mind, here are the seven hermetic principles as they apply to the law of attraction, according to me. Okay, so principle number one is the principle of mentalism, which states that all is mind. And that mind could be interpreted as source energy, the Tao, God, goddess, the divine mind. It basically says that all is one, which means that you are part of the divine mind, that mysterious force that has created and is within everything. And since you, as much as anything, are a part of this all or this divine mind, you too have the power to create or to at least kick off the creative process with your mind. And the Kabbalion addresses this by saying, and I'm going to read this quote, it says, "At the beginning of the creative cycle, the all, in its aspect of being, projects its will toward its aspect of becoming, and the process of creation begins." I prefer a quote from Christopher Pinczak that I took out of The Inner Temple of Witchcraft. He's got a section in that book called The Science of Magic. If you haven't read The Inner Temple of Witchcraft, I highly recommend checking it out. It's an excellent book. But he says, "Thoughts invested with energy become reality. This is magic." And I think that really sums up the principle of mentalism. Good tools for putting this principle into practice are visualization, daydreaming, simply focusing your mind on that which you want to create. A popular way of doing this in the law of attraction community is by making vision boards. And you've probably made a vision board or two in your lifetime. Most of us have. I'm kind of a collaging vision board making freak. My bedroom is covered, wallpapered with collages, and I've got two giant vision boards that are on top of my dresser facing my bed. So I guess when I wake up in the morning and sit up, that's what I'm looking at. And I just like the idea of a vision board, because even after you've seen it just so many times and you become almost blind to it, I think that that imagery goes into your subconscious mind, and that we are visual creatures. And that's why the principle of mentalism works, because what you visualize, what you can picture in your mind is going to speak so much louder to your subconscious creative part than even mere words could. So that's why I like vision boards. Another popular way to approach the principle of mentalism is to use a kind of purposeful daydreaming, or what might be called in magic or Jungian psychology, active imagination, in which you thoroughly and vividly imagine what it is that you intend to manifest as though it has already happened. And this is something I think The Secret talks a bit about. It's been a long time since I've read and seen The Secret. But if you have, I remember somebody talking about, you know, imagining a car that you want. And so what you need to do is visualize yourself like sitting in that car and smelling the leather and putting your hands around the steering wheel. And the more vividly that you can visualize that, and the more vividly you can engage active imagination, the closer you are to bringing that manifestation towards yourself. This principle is also about consistency, and your ability to maintain a certain kind of thought because you attract to you what is in alignment with your most dominant thoughts. And not to get too ahead of myself, but I can't talk about your thoughts creating your reality without mentioning that the reason your thoughts have the ability to bring an intention into reality or to manifestation is because thoughts create emotion. And I personally believe that emotion is what makes those thoughts magnetic, which we will get into here in a bit when we talk about vibration. But I think emotion is actually the key to manifestation, and that mentalism is just a way to create that emotion within yourself. And I also feel that it's important to point out that your subconscious thoughts can be even more powerful than your conscious thoughts, overriding whatever it is you are trying to consciously manifest, which is why shadow work is so important and why I made a video about that called The Dark Side of the Law of Attraction. You can find that on my blog or on YouTube. Just, put in the search box The Dark Side of the Law of Attraction and it should come up. And that's because, if you're consciously saying, that you want to land this amazing job, but deep down inside, on a subconscious level, you feel unworthy of that job, you are going to sabotage yourself at every turn. And also, just that subconscious thought that you're holding has a certain magnetism that is going to attract to you what it is that you don't want. So it's important. Do your shadow work. Number two is the principle of correspondence. And this is the principle that people are often referencing when they say things like, as above, so below, or as within, so without. It's what they're talking about when they refer to the microcosm being a reflection of the macrocosm, which is basically saying that the world within you is a reflection of the world outside of you. It states that there is harmony or a correspondence between the three great planes, the physical plane, the mental plane, and the spiritual plane. And witches will often refer to this as the principle of the law of sympathy. The principle of the law? Maybe just the law of sympathy. And still, another way to consider this principle for all of you who are into quantum physics is the theory of entanglement. Physicists studying entanglement have discovered that everything seems to interact with everything else on a variety of subtle levels beyond the purely physical, which is basically another reiteration that all is one. And it says that because all is one, anything can be affected by anything. Is this too much of a mind trip for you? I know it totally can be. And I just want to state for the record that you don't need to know any of this for the law of attraction to work. In fact, that's what makes the law of attraction so much more appealing to me than ceremonial or even just so-called traditional magic. I learned the law of attraction first, and it worked just fine for me without having to understand all of this theory. Some people think that it's very important to understand all of these principles and laws, and some people think that you cannot perform magic without understanding all of this, but I know from personal experience that that is not true. I think it's interesting to know this stuff, but I don't think it's necessary. I think these principles are in place because they're natural and they're just a part of us and the way that the world works, and they're going to work whether you know about them or not. Some people practicing magic will get very wrapped up in the various correspondences that have been traditionally associated with certain qualities, and they will often refer to these elaborate correspondence charts that will tell them what planet corresponds with this herb, corresponds with this color, this day of the week, this deity, this flower, this symbol, this number. And I am of the opinion, as unpopular as that opinion may be, that it's all kind of unnecessary and just may lead to a case of like magical OCD, not to mention leaving you to rely on the instructions and these, you know, of other people and these tables in the back of your witchy books rather than tapping into the innate correspondences that you already hold within. When I was an actor a long, long, long time ago, way back in the day, I studied something called method acting. And one of the main techniques in method acting is called sense memory. And basically, sense memory works like this. By vividly recalling the smell of your grandma's cookies, you can evoke a certain emotion, you know, whatever emotion that you associate with the smell of grandma's cookies, maybe a nice, cozy, warm feeling. And that's helpful for actors because they need to, you know, kind of play their emotions like a musician plays the keys of a piano. So it's very helpful for actors, and that's a very powerful thing for all actors to learn. But it also applies to the law of attraction if you believe that emotions are magnetic and that they are creating whatever it is you are intending or not intending to manifest. So you might want to, you know, do some research up on sense memory and see if maybe you prefer that method to correspondences instead. If you keep a book of shadows and you really want to keep a table of correspondences in there, unless you are practicing and want to honor and pass down a certain tradition, which is totally valid and worthwhile, I don't discount that at all. But I suggest, unless you are doing that, unless you are practicing traditional witchcraft, that you spend some time getting to know and recording what your personal correspondences are, you know, which are unique to you and your own life experience. And you can explore music that gives you a special feeling, smells or colors that give you a certain emotion. And, of course, many of us have these associations in common. So many of us find, you know, pale blue soothing and red exciting. But you may work the other way around. Who knows? So it's good to kind of get in touch with that and to maybe even keep a list of your own correspondences. And obviously that can be helpful with the law of attraction or any kind of magic that you want to practice. It's really, in my opinion, the difference between magic and law of attraction is kind of like potato, potato, tomato, tomato. It's all the same. We're just calling it something different, and maybe we're just applying a few different techniques and tricks to what we're calling it. But really, at the heart of it, which I'm trying to demonstrate right now, it's all kind of the same. Number three is the principle of vibration. The principle of vibration embodies the idea that motion is manifest in everything in the universe. So basically, nothing rests. Everything is moving and vibrating. And this is something, again, that science has actually proven. Quantum physicists are very much into this. Everything vibrates. The table vibrates. The chair that you're sitting on vibrates. You vibrate. Everything vibrates. And, like vibration attracts life, like vibration. I get a little tongue-tied sometimes. And the way I like to think of vibration and the way a lot of practitioners of the law of attraction consider vibration is emotion. So the way that we as humans vibrate is through emotion. And so whatever feeling that you have, the feeling state that you are in most predominantly is going to attract to you what is in vibrational alignment to that. Some people, followers of Abraham Hicks, they are just about getting into something they call the vortex. And the vortex is basically just this high vibe state where you are just vibrating positivity as much as possible. And that is a less specific way of manifesting. You're not necessarily saying, I want to manifest X, Y, Z. I want to bring this much money into my life. But you're just kind of staying in this groovy vibe, this vortex state of being, so that all good things come to you as they will. To change your emotional state is to change your vibration. So that's why I really love and often talk about the work of Anthony Robbins. because he's all about that. He teaches people how, you know, to use different tips and techniques to change their emotional state. And you can try to change your state by enforcing your will or by trying to make yourself think happy thoughts, but it's just so much more effective to go for a jog or watch a funny movie or, like Anthony Robbins teaches, you know, affect certain body postures or blurt out some outrageous statement in a booming voice to alter your state of mind and the way that you're feeling in any given moment. And when you learn how to do this, when you consciously create an emotional state and sustain an emotional state that is in alignment with what it is you desire, you will find that conscious manifestation or magic or the law of attraction, whatever you want to call it, you will find that it comes very easily to you. Number four is the principle of polarity. The principle of polarity says that everything is of a dual nature, that everything contains within it two opposite poles, which is perhaps how we got the popular saying that opposites attract. All manifested things have two sides. And it's kind of a mind trip to think about, but everything is and isn't at the same time. If you can wrap your mind around that, you can visualize it like this. Imagine that a stick on the ground represents something that you desire. If you pick up that stick, you are also picking up its exact opposite, that which you don't desire. And each end of the stick represents both spectrums of that desire, what you want and what you don't want. And we often just move between both of these poles in a desire to achieve balance or just to get closer to what it is we desire. So, for example, the stick of love, the desire to be in a partnership, also contains the potential for rejection, loneliness, or even abandonment, which is why it's so scary and why so many of us sabotage our best chances at a loving relationship. Somewhere in the back of our minds, we know that in picking up that stick of a desire, we are also picking up its opposite. And in the law of attraction, there's something called contrast. And Esther Hicks, or Abraham Hicks, whatever you want to call her, she talks a lot about contrast. Because in identifying what it is that you don't want, if you make a big list of the things that you don't want, in contrast to that, you can hone in more clearly on what it is you do want. And this is a technique that life coaches often use with their clients to help them map out the life that they want to create for themselves. And it's also just good if you kind of don't know what it is that you want, but you definitely know what it is that you don't want, because the answer is in either side of the stick, if that makes any sense. I hope that you're following me here, because we're moving on to principle number five, the principle of rhythm. The principle of rhythm is the idea that life and everything within it moves with a measured motion, to and fro, in and out, up and down. Life kind of swings back and forth in a pendulum-like movement, which really is building on the principle of polarity that we were just talking about. So like the tides of the ocean, the breath moving in and out of your lungs, the beat of your heart, the phases of the moon, everything has a certain ebb and flow. And I think that this principle can really come in handy when it comes to allowing or letting go, which Deepak Chopra refers to as the law of least resistance. In your resistance, you are creating more of what you don't want, because in your resistance, you are focusing your energy on what it is that you don't want. And since energy flows where attention goes, you're just going to create more of that. But if you can accept that life moves in a cyclical or rhythmic fashion, and that what goes up must come down, you won't feel so panicked or depressed when things don't seem to be going your way, or if you're just going through a dark period. You can just accept that this is the natural order of things, and that while you may currently be experiencing darkness, the light, the sun, is right around the corner. And this is the perfect time, if you find yourself in one of those darker periods, to just be, to just meditate and relax and to kind of just go with the flow and hold your intention for what it is that you desire for the life that you want to experience. Just hold that intention and trust that it will come into manifestation once the tide is rising again. And really, this also, I'm running out of time, so I don't have time to get too much into this, but it also brings to mind the use of rhythm and ritual and how using drums and rattles and chanting and dancing, that can kind of entrain, not kind of, it does entrain the rhythm of your heart to the beat that you're creating. And since I was talking about your emotions, which I believe come from your heart, being the key magnetic factor to the law of attraction, you can probably see how this can come in handy in magic. Moving on, number six, the principle of cause and effect. I think this one pretty much speaks for itself. Cause and effect is a central concept in religions like Buddhism, Hinduism, and Wicca, in which karma is heavily emphasized. Those religions all embrace the concept of reincarnation as well. So they kind of take this principle of cause and effect to a whole other level, implying that things you may have set in motion in a past life will be paid for or played out in this one. But I don't think you have to contemplate it that deeply or take it that far to see that cause and effect is in play all around us and in even the most mundane ways. Throw a stone into a pond and you will create ripples that make their way out toward the shore. Drink a cup of caffeinated coffee and feel the resulting energy. Some people refer to this law as the principle of causality, which brings to mind Newton's statement that to every action there is always an equal and opposite reaction. And this might apply to magic or the law of attraction in the fact, some might say in the opinion, that whatever intention you consciously hold or even unconsciously hold, whatever vibration you are dominantly holding, there must be an outcome. The vibration, thought, or feeling is the cause, and the effect is the manifestation, whether that is the manifestation that you intended or not. So this is actually a great law to consider when you want to see if what you're doing is working or not, and check in with yourself about what your dominant vibration really is. And you can use this as a kind of navigational tool and let it help you redirect your energy toward a more desirable goal. And then in that sense, it all just becomes a game and it starts to get really fun. Two more minutes. Oh no, finally, the principle of gender. And this plays with the idea that gender is in everything. Now, when used in this context, it's not necessarily referring to sex or even the sexes, although this is an idea that is sometimes ritually demonstrated by witches and something called the Great Rite. And of course, every night in beds and bars and the backseats of cars everywhere. But really, this is about procreation and how the energies of masculinity and femininity are inherent in everything. The masculine principle is always in the direction of giving out or expressing, and the feminine is about receiving. So the feminine principle, oh gosh, I'm really out of time. Darn it. Let me just say, in considering the law of attraction, you could look at it like this: thought meeting emotion. A more specific way of putting it would be to say that the masculine linear left hemisphere of your brain is working in conjunction with the more creative, emotive, and abstract right hemisphere of your brain to create what it is you are desiring. So I really like to think of it this way, assuming that there are seven main chakras running along your body. The upper three chakras represent the masculine, the lower three the feminine, and when they meet in the middle at your heart chakra, that's when magic happens. That's your point of creation, which is a concept that I will be exploring in future episodes. Much love. Peace. Woo, I did it.